Hope everybody is having a rewarding and spiritually rewarding Day of Atonement. The title of the sermon this afternoon is A House Divided. A House Divided. I'd like to begin with a speech that some of you, at least a portion of a speech that some of you may recognize. Mr. President and gentlemen of the convention, if we could first know where we are and whither we are tending, we could then better judge what to do and how to do it. We are now far into the fifth year since a policy was initiated with avowed object and confident promise of putting an end to slavery agitation. Under the operation of that policy, that agitation has not only not ceased, but is constantly augmented. In my opinion, it will not cease until crisis shall have been reached and passed. Continuing on, he said, in my opinion, it will not cease until a crisis shall have been reached and passed. A house divided against itself cannot stand. I believe this government cannot endure permanently half slave and half free. I do not expect the union to be dissolved. I do not expect the house to fall, but I do expect it will cease to be divided. It will become all one thing or all the other. Who knows who said that? I won't call on anybody. A lot of people think it was actually President Abraham Lincoln. It was Abraham Lincoln, but it was a speech given prior to his presidency. In 1858, he delivered what became one of the most probably important addresses in U.S. history, and it ended up being entitled The House Divided Speech. It was a speech that he gave when he accepted the Illinois Republican nomination for Senate. The speech marked his entrance into the national political scene. It was a time when the nation was profoundly at odds because of slavery. So when you think of the House Divided speech, most attribute it to Abraham Lincoln. However, that phrase was used many, many times before Mr. Lincoln decided to use it in that famous speech. Here's a couple of examples of where it was used in the past prior to Abraham Lincoln. St. Augustine. He was a theologian, a philosopher, and a bishop. He wrote a book called Confessions, and in his book, he describes his own conversion as an experience as being a house divided against itself. Thomas Hobbes in 1651, in his book, The Leviathan, chapter 18, if you have that book and want to refer to it, you can. I've never heard of it personally, but states that a kingdom divided against itself cannot stand. Thomas Paine, 1776. This one should sound familiar. Common sense. He describes the composition of the English Constitution. He said, hath all the distinctions of a house divided against itself. And then famously, 8 years later, Lincoln's speech during the Senate debate on the Compromise of 1850, Sam Houston proclaimed, a nation divided against itself, it cannot stand. The wording of the next one is quite interesting and actually the inspiration for the message today. It's really appropriate for the Day of Atonement. During the War of 1812, a line appeared in a letter from Abigail Adams to Mercy Otis Warren. This line said, a house divided upon itself, and upon that foundation do our enemies build their hopes of subduing us. I'm going to read that again. A house divided upon itself, and upon that foundation do our enemies build their hopes of subduing us. Abigail Adams and many others understood that when a house is divided against itself, it gives our enemies the upper hand. The History Channel wrote up a big, long article about Lincoln's House Divided speech. I'm going to read just an excerpt from it as we get into the sermon this afternoon. It says, when Abraham Lincoln said a house divided against itself cannot stand, he wasn't talking about the kind of political divisions common today. I'm going to put a little bit of a caveat on there. This was written many, many years ago, so the political divisions that we see today probably are quite a lot more severe than at the time that this was written. But when this was written, he said it wasn't nearly as divisive as it was at the time of slavery. He said Americans may differ sharply on issues like immigration and abortion, but there's no single issue that geographically and economically divides the country in the same way that slavery did in the 1850s. Back then, the U.S. was so divided that many feared it would break out into civil war, a fear that Lincoln unwittingly stoked. If we go back to the speech from Lincoln, you might remember that the context of the speech was that of slavery. The house he was referring to was our country, the United States. Lincoln understood that our house, it was falling apart, and we were in danger of being divided permanently as a country because of that one hot topic. Lincoln understood that our country would fall apart if we didn't do something about the issue of slavery. It said, in general, the Democrats were the party of the slaveholding South and Republicans the party of the North, which in general opposed slavery. Yet it said here that the Republicans weren't too concerned about Lincoln's race because they thought Senator Douglas, the Democrat running against him, wouldn't have an issue winning. Douglas, who also was a Democratic senator at the time, had been seeking a middle ground between the North and South, some way of compromising on the slavery issue. For Lincoln, there was no compromise. We either have it or we don't. In his House Divided speech, Lincoln countered that the Dred Scott decision the previous year had already opened the doors for slavery to be legal. So there's a whole lot of history that I don't have time to go into, but the Dred Scott case essentially made slavery legal, and it was at that time that Lincoln was given this House Divided speech. He said if the U.S. wanted to be a free country, he argued, it had to act now before it was too late. During this time, the House known as the United States of America was being divided by slavery, which at that time would have been considered the enemy, and it was gaining the upper hand. Lincoln knew this and was concerned that the entire country would be split permanently. So what are we seeing today? What do we see today in our nation and, for that matter, globally? Looking at what we see today, we're not necessarily at the same point as we were at the time of slavery, years before the Civil War, but we're getting closer and closer every day. Do we see divided houses today? Do we have divided houses today? Certainly we do, on all different levels. I will not go through all the examples of divided houses because that would take the rest of the time that we have this afternoon. But if you listen to the nightly news, you listen to the news on the radio, even listen to people talk out in public, you know that we have divided houses. I would say one of the biggest divisions that we have right now is, a couple of examples, the Democrats against the Republicans. Again, this sermon is no way meant to be political in nature, just pointing out some of the things that we see. So we have that division between the Democrats and the Republicans. You might talk about the gun owners against the liberals. Maybe you look at the Black Lives Matter movement against the police, or vice versa. Sometimes you may look at the Black Lives Matter and how they are going against neighborhoods, especially their own black neighborhoods in most cases. Families are divided amongst themselves. The divorce rate is skyrocketing, continues to skyrocket. And at times we have division in the church. I gave this sermon last year in Elmira. Since then, I think we could probably add some more divisions. Looking at the news, and again, nothing to be political, not passing any judgment, just sharing what I see on the news. Right now, I can tell you one of the biggest debates and divisions we have in our school district is masks versus no masks. You have your mask camp and you have your no mask camp. It's not for me to judge. If you're comfortable wearing a mask, you wear a mask. And what I teach at school is if you don't, well, we have to wear them, but prior to coming back at the end of the year, they kind of relax it a little bit. But if you don't want to wear a mask, you don't wear a mask, but you respect those that do. But that is creating such a division over what really could be such a simple matter. Better put that in my pocket before we lose it completely. Maybe we talk about the division between vaccination and no vaccination. Again, another hot topic at school. I have to do contact tracing when we get a positive case. And one of the questions I have to ask is your kid vaccinated? Again, they don't have to tell me, but if they're not vaccinated and they come in contact with somebody who's COVID positive, they don't have to quarantine. So that usually spurs them to answer the question. But I've had a lot of people, man, they're yelling and screaming. You have no right to ask me that question. I said, you don't have to answer it. I said, but if you do answer it and they are vaccinated, they don't have to stay home for 10 days. I said, I'm not passing judgment on whether or not you're vaccinated. It's not my, that's not my place. That's a personal decision. Another one is social distancing. We had a football game with about 4,000 or 5,000 people at it. We have teachers in my building that are absolutely irate. How could you possibly have a football game with COVID going around with that many people? Again, I said, you're barking up the wrong tree. It's not my decision. Talk to the superintendent. But again, it's those divisions. All of these heated topics that we have going on right now. The politics that have overtaken the COVID pandemic, they continue to divide our country. And brethren, if we're not careful, it can kind of creep into our lives and we can become part of that if we're not careful. So just as our country was on the verge of total destruction basically prior to the Civil War, I don't know that we're on that fast track right now, but if you look around, we're getting closer and closer, not only on a nationwide scale, but also on a global scale. If we look at the book of Daniel, Daniel 11 verse 40, here's a brief overview of what we can expect at the time of the end. Some of the major events that are going to take place at the time of the end. Daniel 11 in verse 40. Somebody's going to have to, because I got two different things written here. It might be Daniel 12 verse 1. One of those two. I got two different things written here. I think it's Daniel 12. Verse 1, it says, God tells Daniel, at the time Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people, and there shall be time of trouble. Time of trouble. We definitely see time of trouble. It continues on to say, such as never was time like, never been trouble like this before. Such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. Several centuries after Daniel's time, Jesus' disciples asked him about the end time. We read that in Daniel's words. In Matthew 24, 21, here's what Jesus said. Jesus said, for then there will be a great tribulation, such as not been since the beginning of the world, until this time, no, nor ever shall be. So, brethren, we know that as we approach the time of the end, things are going to be troubling. Things are going to be troubling. Divided houses have been part of our history and will continue to be part of our history until the true cause of that division is removed. Until our enemy no longer has that upper hand, as Abigail Adams said in her speech. So, brethren, who's our enemy? Who is our enemy? Brethren, our enemy is Satan. He is absolutely loving the division that he is currently experiencing in our world. He's in his heyday. Because if he can create division, he can pull us away from God. That's what he wants to do. Satan is good, is the God of this world, and he is very, very good at what he does. He is seeing division in this world, and that is Satan's handiwork. Satan works in many ways to create that division in our lives. I gave a couple of examples, the Black Lives Matter versus police. That creates division. That's a wide-scale division. It's not just Black Lives Matter and the police. And again, I got nothing against Black Lives Matter. And in fact, it's probably not the organization, but the radicals that take over it in these names. Again, don't want to get too political in a sermon. But we do have these two groups, the Republicans and the Democrats. You can't turn on the news without them arguing with each other. I see it in my school. You can clearly tell who the Democrats and who the Republicans are, and they're arguing about everything. There is division. There is a lot of division. Again, we have the vaccination, the anti-vaccination. You can go down a long list of those things. And how do we create this division? What do the sides do? They try to create a lack of trust between those sides. They don't trust each other. They don't trust each other. That's part of the issue. There's a book I read not too long ago, just a real very, very thin book. It's actually written in the style of a fable. It was written by John Gordon. It's called The Garden. And this fable is about two trees. And the fable basically plays off the two trees, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and the tree of life. And throughout this book, he goes back and forth. He's trying to teach these two kids that are struggling in school how to follow God by using the analogy of the two trees throughout the fable. What I'd like to do is just talk a little bit quickly about a couple of things that he said that relates to the Day of Atonement and our enemy, the devil. He says, the enemy begins his quest to defeat you by creating doubt that God can be trusted. You look at our money, it says, in God we trust. How many people in this world believe that? How many don't trust in God? So it says here that our enemy, Satan the devil, starts this division by creating a lack of trust. He goes on to say, if you read the story about Adam and Eve, you will see that the serpent began first by talking to Eve. He tried to create a lack of trust. We know the serpent said, did God really say you cannot eat from all the trees in the garden? He probably didn't say it that way. He probably said, did God really tell you you can't eat from all the trees in the garden? He's trying to create mistrust. Because God didn't say that. We know God didn't say you couldn't eat from all the trees. He said you couldn't eat from just that one. But sometimes, when you're trying to create mistrust, there's lies. We know that Satan is a liar and the father of it. Satan is trying to create doubt in the mind of Eve. The truth was that God said you can not only eat from just that one tree. Satan continued to create that doubt to the point that Eve began to distrust God, according to John Gordon. And we know the end of the story, she ate the apple. But John continues to say that Satan works daily to plant those seeds of doubt in our minds so that we begin to distrust God. Doubts lead to distrust. Distrust or mistrust leads to fear. And all of these things help pull us away from living God's way of life and creating that house divided effect that we talked about. Again, think about all the false news on TV. You have your Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, or any other news source that you want to choose. It's more entertainment now. They have a particular agenda, and they provide the details and maybe some facts in some cases that paint only the picture that they want you to see. And by doing that, intentionally or unintentionally, they're creating that division in our country and worldwide. CNN may paint the picture that the police are racist and against all black communities. You might then turn on Fox News and they're going to paint the picture that everything that Joe Biden does is wrong. Some of those things might be true, but it's not all true. They're creating division. And brethren, we know that we're to be part of the world, that we live in it, but we're not to be part of it. And by not being part of that world, we got to be careful when we hear all this stuff, when we're bombarded with it day in and day out. See, Satan wants us to get the partial truth. Because if we have only a partial truth, we begin to fall away from God's truth. If he can create just enough doubt, just enough mistrust, he has that chance to pull us off the path towards God's kingdom. He just needs a little. It starts very, very small. Abraham Lincoln and the others understood that houses that are divided cannot function. And if the divisions continue, they're going to fall apart. See, God knew that. He's not going to let it happen. He's not going to let our houses completely fall apart. Jesus Christ will return and bind Satan on the Day of Atonement prior to it completely falling apart. Where Abraham Lincoln and Abigail Adams, Thomas Hobbes, and all the other ones that I talked about, they weren't the first to use that phrase. The phrase was first used in the Bible. Mark chapter 3, verse 25. In Mark chapter 3, verse 25, it's very short, you don't necessarily even need to turn there. It says, if a house is divided against itself, that house cannot stand. You can read almost the same thing in Matthew 12, verse 25. Matthew 12, verse 25. It says, Jesus knew their thoughts and said to them, every kingdom divided against itself will be ruined. And every city or household divided against itself will not stand. God makes it very clear we cannot have division. God is all-knowing, and He knew that we would have division throughout our lives and throughout all the lives of those people in the history books. God knew that. God also knew that we could avoid division to some degree or another if we followed His way of life. He gave us this book. Here's the directions. We can help create a lot of division if we follow what's in here. Division in a house occurs for multiple reasons. But to make a long story short and to make this wide topic a little less complicated, if we can follow the fruits of the Spirit, we can help eliminate a lot of division. Turn, if you would, to Galatians 5, verse 22. Galatians 5, verse 22. In this section, we know that it lists all the fruits of the Spirit for us. It says, "But the fruits of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness." Verse 23, "gentleness and self-control. Against such things there is no law." Brethren, if we can demonstrate the fruits of the Spirit, we would not see the division that we see in our world right now. We're living in tumultuous times. I hesitated to say that with absolutely no liquid in my mouth. I have a hard time talking when I am drinking things, let alone when your mouth is dry. I pulled it off, tumultuous. Look at that, I said it again. Tumultuous times. We're living in rough times. We really are. But we know things have to get worse before they get better. So again, this isn't meant to be a downer. But we know things have to get rough before they get better. When you do construction on your house is a train wreck. And then all of a sudden, it kind of comes together. Things look pretty good. That'll be God's kingdom when we get there. We know that division would be part of life. Matthew 10, verse 4. In Matthew 10, verse 4. It says, "Do not suppose that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to turn man against his father, daughter against her mother, daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's enemies will be the members of his own household." So again, there is a lot of doom and gloom when we talk about division. The Day of Atonement's about many things. As I mentioned, it's a time for us to humble ourselves, to get away from those things that we focus on at least three times a day. Got to have our breakfast, lunch, and dinner. If you're like Jackson and Mason, you have a snack between breakfast and lunch, between lunch and dinner, and then between dinner and bed, and then probably maybe a small one after you actually get in bed. They eat all the time. They're growing teenage boys. We think about that all the time. And sometimes when we get those thoughts in our heads, whether it's watching TV, playing video games, eating, sometimes we lose track of the things that we're supposed to do. God knew that. He has a great plan for each and every one of us. The Day of Atonement takes away some of those distractions. We don't have to worry about lunch and dinner. Maybe dinner, but not till. So I have this app here on my watch that tells me when sunset is. I normally turn it off on the Day of Atonement. But just in case you were wondering, here in Hamburg, in 5 hours and 17 minutes, you can have a glass of water. Unless you're like me, I make the boys wait just a little bit longer. If you can do it for 24 hours, you can do it for 25, right? But again, it brings us back. It allows us to get closer to God. That's the purpose. But a Day of Atonement is also about hope. It's about hope. It's very easy to get depressed, to get anxious when we look around the world about what's going on. I go to school every day. Every day I go in there, somebody's going to yell at me about something. It used to bother me. It doesn't bother me anymore because I know that it's just part of the job. Part of our job as Christians as we walk towards God's kingdom is kind of taking these things in, but also being an example for other people. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. We have division in our world because Satan is being allowed right now to influence us. When we fail to express the fruits of the Spirit, maybe not so much us, but people in general in the world, we do that because we are carnal. Satan preys upon each and every one of us, especially when we become weak. We're tested every second of every day. Every second of every day we're being tested. Satan throws out traps for us. He wants us to be unkind to others. He wants us to lose our self-control. He doesn't want us to be faithful and trusting in God and following His commandments. He'd rather see us fight than be the peacemaker. And all of us have our different challenges in life. Like I said, every day I go to school, I know I'm going to get yelled at. I have to consciously say, all right, back up. I can't attack them like they're attacking me. That's not what God expects. God expects us to be the peacemaker. I won't say I'm perfect every time because I'm not. I'm far from it. I get myself in trouble more than I probably should with the bosses. I call them up, say, hey, just so you know, you're probably going to get a phone call. I wasn't very peaceful. I lost my cool. We all do that. God knows that we do that. But that doesn't mean that we don't continue to strive and try. The Day of Atonement must be fulfilled before we can consistently demonstrate those fruits of the Spirit. Because when Satan's out and about, he pulls us off track. We understand that this day pictures the binding of Satan. When Satan is bound, that source of our division, it's going to disappear. We're going to see a different world. Jesus Christ's second coming, as we just celebrated at the Feast of Trumpets, is going to be closely followed by this day. Christ is going to return. Satan's not going to be around for a while. Take a look at Revelation 20, chapter 2. Or Revelation 20, verse 2. Again, we know this one very well. Pretty much look at this one every year on the Day of Atonement. It says, He laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. And he cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal on him so that he should deceive the nations no more till 1,000 years were finished. Brother, when Satan is bound, he will no longer be able to deceive us. He will no longer be able to cause us to sin. Revelation 12:9 tells us that the devil will be cast out along with his deception. We know that Satan deceives the whole world. It tells us that in Revelation 12:9. It says the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth and his angels were cast out with him. Until this Day of Atonement is fulfilled, Satan is an enemy. And he is looking for every opportunity to get us to slip up and to fall away from God's way. A central theme of the Bible is that the devil is the enemy of all humanity. The very name Satan, the designation the Bible uses most for this evil being, helps reveal his malicious intent. We know that God calls things what they are. Satan is Hebrew, meaning adversary. He is our adversary, the enemy, the opponent, the antagonist, or our foe. That's what Satan means in Hebrew. The verb forms of the noun mean to accuse, to slander, to be an adversary. Satan's doing it all day long. The other term the Bible often uses to describe this being is the devil is similarly revealing. Devil is translated from the Greek, which means diablos, the root from which we get the word diabolical, used to describe something that's wicked or sinister. When you think of Satan or the devil, you don't think of roses and rainbows. You don't think of anything positive or fun, puppies, kittens. You don't think of those things. You think wicked and sinister. That's Satan. That's the devil. In 1 Peter 5, verse 8, again, one that we know very well. We're told to be sober, to be vigilant. Why? Because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking to whom he may devour. Jesus Christ says, Satan is a liar and the father of it, and there is no truth in him. The Bible reveals the enormity of the lies and their impact. The Apostle John wrote in Revelation 12:9 that he deceives the whole world. He that he's referring to there is Satan. I want to read just a portion of a Beyond Today article that was published back in 2008 by David Palmer. I think it fits in well with the topic this afternoon. I think he stated the situation we see now very well as he attributes the current state of affairs and calls them the works of Satan. So again, David Palmer wrote this back in 2008 and Beyond Today. It says, can someone in God's church ever become a pawn in the hands of the devil? Have you ever allowed Satan to influence your decisions? We are warned to be careful. Satan is extremely subtle and can influence people much easier than we might think. He asked the question, how does Satan devour? The dictionary describes the word devour as to prey upon or destroy, consume, bedevil, dispose of, make short work of, get caught up in, and watch or listen with eager persistence. He continues on to say, if someone wanted to devour and destroy God's church, how might they do it? During the time of Rome, the devil's method was cruel persecution. Today, with freedom of religion in most of the world, the devil uses different sets of rules, a method that we call divide and conquer. Satan is dividing our nation and our world. If we go back to David Palmer's article and the dictionary definition of devour, the one definition is to get caught up in. Satan is good at getting human beings to get caught up in those behaviors that are contrary to God's laws and contrary to those fruits of the spirits that we talked about earlier. Again, not looking to get political, but has our country and the world gotten caught up in the political side of the COVID-19 pandemic? When have we ever seen in the history of a pandemic politics brought into health? I wasn't alive in the other pandemics, but from what I read, that didn't happen. Sure, there were probably issues with maybe not agreeing with everything that the other person says, but this has gotten so big. It has gotten so political. Again, the Black Lives Matter, right in the midst of the pandemic. I wasn't sure the state of Washington was going to recover from that, and I'm not sure some of the cities have yet. We talked about the country being on the verge of splitting in the time of the Civil War. When you looked at the streets of Seattle and some of those other cities with the riots, I'm not sure how far away from a Civil War we were at that point. How about the election? How did that divide our nation? I know we don't get caught up in politics, but as I said earlier, we live in the world. We hear people talk. They try to suck you into those conversations. During that election, Washington, D.C., prior to that inauguration of Biden, what did we see in Washington, D.C.? Talk about division. Whether they're Trump supporters or radicals that hijacked it or whoever they were, doesn't matter. The fact of the matter was they tried to take over the Capitol building. And again, whether that the motive behind that, whether they were Trump's persons, Black Lives Matter, it doesn't matter. That's not the point. The point is we got a nation, we got a society that is looking to be divided. And in this case, it got violent. People lost their lives because of that division. Our country's still divided. We still have hearings. It's on the news all the time. I can't stand listening to the news anymore. I try not to too much, just enough to have a clue what's going on. But if you get sucked into that day in and day out, sometimes that affects our attitudes. Again, it's very difficult to have a conversation with a person of a different opinion right now without getting that conversation to turn quickly away from the fruits of the Spirit. Many are not able to act with kindness. There was a time when we could disagree on something but still be kind to each other. It's one of the things I try to teach in school. We got a lot of kids now that have some alternative lifestyles. We got the two groups at the end of the year, it got pretty bad. So we're having conversations of whether you agree with a lifestyle or not, obviously we don't agree with that alternative lifestyle, but we still do have that responsibility to be kind. We don't have to condone it, and that's what I tell the kids. You don't have to condone it. You don't have to like it, but you can't be mean to that person. Nowhere in the Bible does God say, be mean to somebody. He says to love our enemies. Again, try teaching that to a 13-year-old whose brain's all messed up because it's not quite developed yet. So we try to have those conversations, but God wants us to be the light to the world. He wants us to demonstrate those fruits of the Spirit so that we can be the example of how we're supposed to live. We're supposed to act with kindness. We're supposed to be patient. And we're supposed to be that peacemaker. And again, going back to the COVID-19, not to dwell on it, but have people gotten caught up in that media hysteria? They absolutely have. This has gone on. We're going to be going on 2 years come March. In 2020, I said that you essentially have two camps. Again, I gave this last year. I said you have the COVID will kill you camp, and the COVID is serious, but we got to take precautions. And we got to use basic hand washing techniques, hygiene practices. We got to be mindful when we're sick not to go out into public. All those things that we knew anyhow. I mean, who went to church before when you were sneezing all over the place? You don't want to get the person next to you sick. But again, we got this media hype surrounding it. Whether or not Satan's involved with that, I'm not necessarily saying that's the case, but we do know that Satan likes division. And he's definitely latched on to this particular hot topic for sure. I think we now need to add, again, the vaccine versus the no vaccine, the mask versus no mask. And again, whichever side you're on doesn't matter. The point is, it creates division. If we don't treat those disagreements with the fruits of the Spirit in mind, we create that division. But one of the things I did want to highlight is isolation. One of the things that, and I was given this in the midst of kind of the shutdown last year at Atonement, one of the things that this pandemic has done is it isolated people. Is that a tactic of Satan? Does Satan want us to be alone? He doesn't like this. He's not loving this day at all for many reasons. He knows what's coming. He knows what this day's picture is, I'm sure, but he doesn't like us together because if he can get us alone, he's got a lot better chance of pulling us off track. So again, for those months and months that we had to stay away from people, man, it was hard. I know that the weekly Sabbath is my day to reset, try to get back on track, try to connect with people that think and believe and talk the same way that we do. The longer you're away from that, the better chance Satan has to take hold of our lives. And again, I'm not downplaying the seriousness of COVID in any way, shape, or form. It's certainly serious. I just use that as an example of Satan getting us to be by ourselves. If you think about the tools of any predator, we heard about Satan as being a predator, roaming around like a roaring lion. You know, lions are predators, right? What's one of the things that all predators do? Back to your biology classes, girls and boy. They isolate their prey. So if you watch Discovery, Animal Planet, and you watch the way a predator hunts, they don't go after the strong animal. That can cause them injury. They go after the weak animal. And what do they do when they spot that weak animal? They isolate it. So any predator is going to isolate their prey. They're going to pick out the weak. That's when they're going to attack. Satan does the same thing. When we isolate ourselves from Sabbath services, and there's times when we have to. That's just life. We get sick. We have medical issues. There's things that are going on that you just can't attend. That happens. But we can't do that on a regular basis. I feel for those people that are physically not able to attend services, because they are isolated. That's where we come in. We got to make sure that we connect with those people so that they feel as if they are still part of God's church, because they are. God tells us that it is not good for us to be alone. In fact, he knows that it's not good so much that he commands us on the Sabbath to dwell together, to come together as a church. In Psalm 133, verse 1. Again, another one we probably know pretty well. It says, behold, Behold. That word gets your attention. Pay attention to what comes after it. Behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. There'll be a time in the future when we will see more unity than we see now. We will once again be at one with God. That time can't truly come to fruition until the Day of Atonement is fulfilled. The world is going to continue to see division. It will continue to see disobedience. Continue to see behavior contrary to God's laws until Satan is bound. Because we know he is that cause of sin. Paul teaches us that Satan has influenced every human being to walk in the ways of disobedience. He notes that those called into God's church once walked according to the course of the wicked. We can read that in Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 2. It says, wherein time past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air. The prince of the power of the air we know is Satan. The spirit that now works in the children of disobedience. We have plenty of disobedience. Anybody who walks in a public school sees disobedience. Walks down the street. There's no respect for authority anymore. We have disobedience all over the place. There's no respect for law enforcement, societal laws. Everybody feels, yeah, you can do whatever you want, right? That's the society that we live in. Satan must really be enjoying what he's seeing. Must really be enjoying what he's seeing. We have a divide between many law-abiding citizens and the police and the Black Lives Matter protesters and you name it. Look at New York. We got a catch and release program. I'm not talking about fishing. All right, you catch the trout, you look at it, man, it's a nice one, you throw it back. I'm talking about criminals. We had a guy in Elmira, I think, was arrested 12 or 15 times before he ended up shooting a local police officer. 12 or 15 times he was in jail. Catch and release. Again, Satan must be loving what we're doing as a society. Because Satan, he wants lawlessness. He wants disorder. He wants utter chaos. Because if he can get that rolling, he's got a better chance of sucking us in. We can avoid all of this if we remain close to God. That's why we're here. We know all of this stuff. We're fortunate. We're blessed to have been called out and to be given a different way to live. Yeah, we got to deal with it. But we know, we have the blessing knowing that it's going to happen and that there's something better on the other side of this. We have that hope that I talked about earlier. It's easy for Satan to work when we are divided. But when we dwell together, we are much stronger. I talked about the predator and prey. If you look at the prey, what do? They stick together. You don't want to be that lone deer or gazelle or the fish that the shark's coming after. We like Shark Week. We watch it every year. One of the things that you always see is the big bait ball of fish. They're not swimming frantically. It looks like they're absolutely out of control. But all those fish on the outside, where are they trying to get? They want to get to the center. Why? Because they don't want to be that lone fish swimming out here next to the shark. That's what predators do. All their behavior is intentional, and their behavior is for one purpose. They have two purposes: to breed and not to get killed by predators. That's what animals do. So those fish trying to get into the center, the large herds of gazelles or deer or whatever, always trying to stay in the center. They don't want to be seen as the weak off there to the side. Satan loves that when we go off to the side. When we're here, we're safe. When we're with people of like mind, we're safe. Because we can resist Satan with the word of God. As I said, God had a plan for us when he called us. Part of that plan is to be a member of his family in the kingdom of God. Something that we're going to hear a lot about come Monday. Something that we look forward to each and every year. But he also told us that we are not only to seek his kingdom, but along the way we're to preach the gospel and to prepare a people. That's one of our other callings and one of the other parts of the mission that God has for us. Again, one of the best ways for us to prepare a people and to show them the correct way is by the way we behave. The way we behave. We were called to walk differently, to talk differently. All those fruits of the spirits that many in the world don't understand, we had the opportunity to learn those, to practice those, to see other people in the church practicing those. So with that special calling, and it is a special calling, we do have some special responsibilities. We can help this dark world seem a little bit better. We can do our part by demonstrating those fruits of the Spirit. When people argue about this and that, and they're going to, we can be the peacemaker. That doesn't make us weak. That makes us the peacemaker. God tells us to do that. We can demonstrate self-control when others do something to wrong us. A lot of maniac drivers. And at one stage or another, we probably all got a little bent out of shape about that person that cut us off or is going 4 miles an hour in front of us when we got to get to work. Don't they know we're late? Right? We can take that step back. We can show that love to them. You know what? I'm not going to honk at them this time. Who knows what's going on with them? You know, maybe they just came back from the emergency room. Maybe they have a headache. So we need to go out of our way to ensure that we do provide that light to the world. Brother, we're headed to the feast very soon. We'll be looking, many of us will be looking to interact in the community. We'll be going to restaurants. We'll be doing different activities. And oftentimes when we go, I say this quite often when I speak, is those communities, they look to us. They know we're different. They see all these people coming in looking like this in the middle of the week, carrying Bibles. What in the world is going on in there? So we do. We catch attention. They look at us. And the way we behave, we often, I mean, how many times does the minister stand up when they're doing announcements saying, I heard this or I heard that about our group and how we treated people differently than what they're used to? We're called to do that. That shouldn't happen by accident. We need to take time to get to know those folks that are taking care of us, the person that cleans our room, the person that takes our dishes away from the table, maybe those attractions that we visit, the person working the front counter. Take just a minute or two to have a conversation with them, make their day. Not all their customers are friendly. We are. And I know when we go, we hear all the time that people appreciate that. Those of you that are going to Lancaster, you may have received an email from Mr. Britt. One of the things he's asking the folks in Lancaster to do this year is to advertise the Kingdom of God seminars that they're going to have during the feast. So one of the ways that I think we can probably advertise the best is just by the way we behave. Just by the way we behave, we act in a kind and loving manner to somebody. People want to be part of something where they feel good. I'm not saying we're a feel-good church, rock and roll bands, and that type of thing. But when you come to church, you do. You feel good when you're around people that treat you kindly. I've said this often. When I first came into the church, I didn't know anybody. I thought you were all weird. I thought Lori was part of a cult. Man, where are you going now? What is this weird stuff that you do? But that day I walked into church, everybody there, it was like I'd been there forever. They want to be your friend. They want to treat you well. And it's because of Matthew 5:14 that we do that. Matthew 5:14. It tells us very clearly, you are the light of the world. Can't make that any plainer. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. So when we resist Satan, when we resist his lies, resist his division, and we do our good deeds, it doesn't only make people around us feel better. It says right here that it glorifies our Father in heaven. Brother, as we get closer to the fulfillment of the Day of Atonement, we know that times are going to get tougher. Again, not meant to be doom and gloom. As I tell people at school, I'm a straight shooter. I'm going to tell you what I think most of the time. I'm going to tell you when you do a great job, I'm going to praise you. But if you're slacking, I'm going to call you on the carpet too. That's the way my boss always treated me. I always appreciated kind of knowing where I stand. God's a straight shooter. He's going to tell us this is the way it's going to be at the time of the end. But, and there's a big but there, if you can make it through to the end, there's going to be something that most people can't comprehend. I don't know that I can comprehend it. We hear about it every year at the feast, the kingdom of God. We get this, we read about it in the Bible. People try to portray it in slides at the feast on PowerPoints. But I'm not sure I can truly comprehend what we're in store for. I know it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be awesome because all the stuff that we see right now, we won't see. That'll be gone. Satan will not have the same pull that he has right now. In 2 Timothy 3, we read, I'm not going to read through all of these, but there's a whole list of things that we can expect at the time of the end. And I think at times God gives us these things so that we're not surprised. I always tell teachers, if you have an interaction with a parent, please don't let me be surprised when they call me. Give me a heads up. I can defend you a whole lot easier if I know what I'm defending. I said, I don't want to play dumb on the phone. I do that well enough on my own. I don't need help. Tell me what's up. Don't surprise me. God doesn't want surprises. He's telling us exactly what's going to happen. So if we look at 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, there's a whole list of things there. It says, there will be perilous times to come. Men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, disobedient to parents, unthankful. As I'm reading these, you can probably picture all of these things that you see out in society. Plenty of unthankful folks out there. Unholy, unloving, unforgiving, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Verse 6, for of this sort are there those who creep into households and make their captives gullible, women loaded down with sins, led away by various lusts, always learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Brethren, that's what we're called to do, to come to the knowledge of the truth. Satan would love nothing other than to make sure we don't learn that truth. Remember, he's the father of lies. John 8, verse 44 reminds us of that. We have troubling times ahead. Satan is going to be allowed to roam and to influence us for a little while longer. When, we don't know. We don't know when this day is going to be fulfilled. God didn't tell us. But he told us to be mindful, to be watchful of things that are going to happen before that time. We're told to seek the truth, to stay away from lies. John 8, verse 44 says, you are the father of the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. He, referring to Satan, was a murderer from the beginning and stayed not in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. So, brethren, we need not get sucked into the lies of Satan. We need to ensure that our houses don't become divided. If we stay strong as a church, if we stay strong as brethren, we will be able to hold fast until the end. We'll be able to make it until this day is truly fulfilled. Brethren, we know that the time is coming when Satan will no longer be able to devour the people of God. He won't be roaming around like that lion anymore. He will no longer be able to deceive, to lie, and to influence. As I said earlier, the Day of Atonement is a day of hope. We should all have hope and find peace in knowing that Jesus Christ is going to return. It's not an if, it's a when. He is going to return. And when he does, Satan is going to be bound and our houses will no longer be divided. Until that day comes, we do need to take care of each other. We need to do our best to avoid division and keep our houses together in unity. Final scripture, Galatians 6. Galatians chapter 6, verse 9. It says, so let's not get tired of doing what is good. It tells us not to get tired of doing good. Does it get tiring at times? It sure does. It definitely gets tiring, always trying to be the peacemaker. Always trying to show love and kindness in a world that isn't necessarily filled with it. But God tells us very clearly, don't get tired of doing what is good. At just the right time, we will reap a harvest of blessing if we don't give up. There's the hope. There's the hope. We are going to reap a harvest of blessing. Verse 10, it says, therefore, whenever we have the opportunity, we should do good to everyone, especially those in the family of faith. But notice that it said everyone. It didn't say just the people that we like. It says everyone. Again, God says, love your enemies. Do good to your enemies. It's hard, but we have to do it. So, brethren, we are to keep the faith. It is a day of hope. It is a day that we certainly look forward to. Let us continue to do good and keep our house together. And brethren, when Satan is bound, we will be one step closer to dwelling together in unity in God's kingdom. Brethren, I hope you have a very good remainder of the Day of Atonement and have a wonderful feast.